Our first guests today come with new data about how Michigan residents feel about the economy. Governor Snyder and President Obama, Current State's the first to bring you the results of the latest State of the State survey. It comes courtesy of Michigan State University's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. About 1,000 Michigan residents participated in the survey by phone. Dr. Charles Ballard directs it. Welcome back.
Thanks, Mark.
We're also happy to welcome the new director of the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. Dr. Matt Grossman began at the Institute about a month ago. Belated welcome, and we're glad you're here, Matt.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Matt is a nationally known political scientist who's researched U.S. politics and policymaking, especially interest groups, political parties, networks, and campaigns. He's the author of 3 books and is about to release his 4th. We'll be cutting a pretty wide swath with this segment. Polling, Michigan, politics, the economy. We're going to try to touch on the Iowa caucuses and the presidential campaign. We'll start with the survey, though. Charlie Ballard, it detected a drop in consumer confidence. Flesh this out for us.
A very small drop. I don't think that's the main thing here. For instance, we asked people, how are you doing currently? And 58% said their current household financial situation is excellent or good. That's down from 60% in our previous survey. But for me, the main thing is that both of those numbers are way higher than they were not that long ago, and among the highest that we've had in more than a decade. For instance, back in the about 7 or 8 years ago, at the worst time of the Great Recession, those numbers were in the low 40s. So I do see a little bit of a drop back, but I don't think that this is a sign of a sea change. I think that people are generally fairly optimistic, which is appropriate since we've had this long, not completely spectacular, but long but steady recovery from the Great Recession. And we've added more than 400,000 jobs since we bottomed out about 6 years ago.
Let's transition to the approval ratings for Michigan's executive, Governor Rick Snyder. Now, you conducted your survey between late October and late December, and I want to get both of your thoughts here on what's happened since, because January has been, or was eventful to say the least. But first, for the record, how did Michiganders feel about Rick Snyder back at the end of 2015?
Yeah, at the end of 2015, and I think it's very important to note the time frame, because the Flint story really didn't burst on the scene in a big way until after this. But his numbers actually ticked upward to about 42%, either in excellent or good. That's one of the best that he's had in his administration. For most of the time that he's been in office, Rick Snyder has had approval ratings in the mid-30s. And so this was an improvement. But I think the big story here is this sort of serves as a benchmark for looking to see how much of an effect the Flint story will have on his approval.
Could you detect whether the water crisis was on people's radar back in December?
It certainly, the story was out there.
Yes,
people
it was.
Were aware that there was this issue, but it hadn't galvanized the public attention. I'd be interested to know what Matt thinks about that.
We didn't have too many people cite the water crisis as the most important problem, but we expect that number to go up and Snyder's approval to go down in our next survey, which is in the field now. But at least from 2014 to 2015, people's impressions of the governor appeared to be rising, even among those people that we re-interviewed. We interviewed once in 2014 and then at the end of 2015. And even among that segment, there was a slight increase in approval. So there may have been some positive trends right before the news story became national and Snyder landed in more trouble.
Matt, as the new head of the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research, you're on board here now. What are your plans for this survey before we get to President Obama here?
Well, I think you'll see us include a lot more on the presidential election and on politics and policy generally. I think even in the next month or so, you may hear from us again on both the Michigan primary and some of the current issues like the Detroit schools and the Flint water crisis, where we hope to be answering some more asking some more direct questions about Michigan politics and policy. But we'll keep in all of our regular questions, so we'll be able to track changes and feelings about the Michigan economy as well.
We're talking about polling, politics, and the economy with political expert Dr. Matt Grossman, the new director of MSU's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. Also with us, the director of the State of the State Survey, Dr. Charles Ballard here of Michigan State. Finally, Charlie, attitudes about President Obama.
President Obama's numbers dipped very, very slightly from about 40% to 39%, but that's not a statistically significant change. Basically, the president, when he first came to office in 2009, there was this burst of enthusiasm, as there often is when a new person comes to office, and he was above 70% giving him an excellent or a good. I think those numbers were unsustainable, and he dropped fairly steadily. And for most surveys in the last several years, he's been in the low 40s, the upper 30s, and this is a continuation of that. I would note that he gets a lot more excellent than Governor Snyder, but he also gets a lot more poor. Mm-hmm. People have more spread out views about the president, whereas the governor tends to get a lot in the fair category. One other thing to note, there's a gender gap and a much bigger race gap. President Obama does a little bit better among women. Governor Snyder does 10 percentage points worse among women. But then when you look at the black-white difference, and this is perhaps not surprising, and we want to follow this very closely in our next survey, especially in light of what's happening in Flint. Governor Snyder did almost 30 percentage points better among whites than among blacks. President Obama, 45 percentage points better among blacks than among whites. Mm. Big difference there.
Any particular numbers rise to the top? This was your first one, Matt, I take it, your first State of the State survey here with you on board. What was there a surprise in this thing for you?
I don't think there was huge changes, but I think part of why you're seeing such a steady state of opinion on Obama and Snyder is because of increasing partisan polarization. Some of those racial and gender differences are also consistent with big party differences in how people see the president and the governor. And if you compare our ratings, we've been doing this, Charlie and the other folks have been doing the State of the State since the 90s, and so we can track how Snyder and Obama's approvals compare to previous governors and presidents. And we're seeing a little bit more steadiness so far among Snyder and Obama, and that's consistent with national differences, where we're seeing Republicans almost immediately decided not to like Obama, and Democrats have stuck with them longer than we saw for similar trends under Bush and Clinton.
Today is, of course, the Iowa caucuses here. We're going to actually finally begin hearing from the electorate, at least in Iowa. And it struck me over the weekend that this is not a one-person, one-vote kind of thing. There's a completely different dynamic in play in Iowa, a different process. Could you take a minute, Matt Grossman, and explain what actually happens on the ground in the Iowa caucuses?
Well, the strange thing here is that officially what we have is the first of a three-round process for selecting delegates to the national convention for a small number for the Democrats and the Republicans. But of course, unofficially, it's the first day, like the first round of the NCAA tournament, and it usually causes a couple of candidates to drop out of the race almost immediately and a few others to reconsider their position. It changes the way that money flows and the way that media attention flows. So it's very important for all of those reasons. What actually happens on the ground, the Republican process is a little more straightforward. You go in, you have to attend a meeting, but you vote by secret ballot. The Democratic process is a lot more fun to watch. You go into different corners of the room to state your position. And then if a candidate doesn't have more than 15% of the vote, then its supporters are invited to join one of the candidates that does meet that threshold. So that's the likely fate of Martin O'Malley's supporters, a small number tonight, is that they'll go in, voice their support, and then almost immediately have to switch to Clinton or Sanders.
Where do you think they'll go? Do we know enough about Martin O'Malley to know where his supporters will go?
All five of them. I think Martin O'Malley, very good guy, but he just hasn't caught on in this election. I don't think that there are going to be a whole lot of people who are going to be going into the Iowa caucuses as O'Malley supporters. I think this is really a Clinton-Sanders race, and. So we'll see what happens.
Matt Grossman, a particular focus of your work is messaging by political parties and candidates, a peculiarly modern term, it seems to me, messaging. I got to thinking over the weekend, how long has this been a word, this messaging thing anyway? Talk to us about what you view messaging is. What is it?
Well, we just use it as a general term for the kinds of words that politicians use to communicate with voters, and we try to categorize them and track changes in them. And we've been looking at what's used in campaign commercials and campaign speeches, et cetera, for 50 years or so. And what we find is that Democrats, the most common Democratic message is the people versus the powerful. You hear that all the time. That we represent you against the interests of, in current terms, they say the 1% or the rich. But that type of message has been going for a very long time. What you don't hear very commonly that we're starting to at least see some chance of among Bernie Sanders supporters is the sort of broad ideological messaging. You usually hear Democrats running away from the word liberal and certainly socialist, and that's might be changing a little bit this year, as at least some of Sanders' comments have at least defended those labels. So that'll be a change.
We're going to be listening here to a few campaign commercials that have been airing in Iowa, along with a few stump speeches. And let's start that right now. We've seen the ascendancy of Donald Trump on the Republican side. Matt Grossman, I want to ask you about Trump's approach on the stump. This is an unscripted approach, and let's listen to it here just a bit. Here is Donald Trump recently campaigning in Muscatine, Iowa. He's initially talking about funding for his competitors' campaigns, but he quickly switches gears.
Every single candidate is doing what they're doing, okay? So you have Cruz. I mean, Cruz is getting oil money. By the way, he is so against ethanol, you can forget it, okay? You can forget it. All of those wonderful farmers that produce what they have to produce, Cruz is totally against. Then he changed. You know, they said, well, he's very principled. Well, he's not so principled, because a couple of weeks ago he changed and he got a little bit more. And he changed again, got a little bit more. What's that about principle? If he's against it, let him be against it.
I hesitate to even refer to that as messaging. It seems too spontaneous, but clearly Trump is resonating here. Is this stream of consciousness approach on the stump a part of Trump's appeal?
Well, I don't know if it's the stream of consciousness, but certainly the willingness to say whatever he thinks is going to be most effective in bringing down his opponents is useful for a politician. We find that people remember negative messages much better than they remember positive messages. And you saw a couple of potentially useful messages there. One, I don't think the ethanol issue is playing a huge role in the campaign, but certainly a way to get in a specific Iowa interest there. And then to transition to the broader point that Ted Cruz is not as principled as he appears or has flip-flopped on the issues, that's a very common and successful political message.
Charlie Ballard, you alluded to the racial and the gender dynamics in play here involving approval ratings for Governor Rick Snyder and for President Obama. And I have heard that Donald Trump's success so far in the campaign is widely attributed to a broad frustration or anger to the estrangement of white working class males, and I'm sure there are others. Do you feel there is a race and gender dynamic in play with Trump's appeal?
Oh, absolutely. Certainly race. One of the things that before he was a presidential candidate, Donald Trump would often appear on the Today Show or elsewhere, claiming with no evidence that President Obama was not born in the United States and is not truly a United States citizen. And I think that most analysts view that as a sort of a coded racial appeal, an appeal to whites who feel very uncomfortable with the notion of an African American as the president. And then he's followed on that with the proposal to have no Muslims be able to enter the country, and his proposals for deportation of 11 million people who are here without documentation. So all of those, in one way or another, have a racial or a group identity mm-hmm. component that I think does appeal to a segment of the white electorate.
We're talking polling, politics, and the economy with Dr. Charles Ballard of Michigan State, the director of the State of the State Survey, also political expert Dr. Matt Grossman, the new director of MSU's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. Let's turn to Trump's main competitor in Iowa, Senator Ted Cruz. Let's get your thoughts here on an ad airing for Cruz in Iowa. Here it is.
I mean, hey, I lived in New York City and Manhattan all my life, okay? So, you know, my views are a little bit different than if I lived in Iowa.
They are different, like on abortion.
Would President Trump ban partial birth abortion?
Well, look, I am pro-choice in every respect.
And what does Trump think about Iowa?
How stupid are the people of Iowa?
Donald Trump, New York values, not ours.
You know, my views are a little bit different than if I lived in Iowa.
I'm Ted Cruz, and I approve this message.
And you don't learn it's a Ted Cruz ad until the very end. It's an attack ad on Donald Trump. Your responses. What do you hear going on here, Matt?
Well, to put this in context, that ad's only been running for the last couple of weeks, and the wider campaign has actually been fairly positive for a long period, especially towards Trump. A lot of people were afraid to attack him, either because he would attack back, or probably more importantly, because they didn't know who would benefit. But finally, Cruz became the most obvious competitor, and so started attacking Trump.
And went ahead in the polling in Iowa for a period there, I believe. Trump is still outpolling him again now at this point.
Right. Well, Cruz, as soon as he went ahead, got more scrutiny from the media and from Trump. And that's also a common pattern and happened four or five times in 2012. So I think, though, that the commentary there about Trump is fairly effective. And if run more directly for a longer period, once we get to New Hampshire or South Carolina, might potentially have more of an effect. But we really haven't seen a sustained advertising campaign so far.
Charlie Ballard, your thoughts?
It's a very long time since the state of New York went to the Republican Party. And those who are Republicans in New York tend to be on the sort of the left edge of the Republican Party nationally. And so it's a very easy thing for a Republican presidential candidate to attack New York. That's mm-hmm. something that really resonates with a lot of voters, and not just Republicans, but a lot of voters nationally who feel that New York, it's the center of the financial services industry, which is not very popular, and it's the center of the national media, which are not very popular either. And so attacking New York is a one that probably makes a lot of sense.
Let's turn to the two key Democrats in the race, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Let's listen to Senator Sanders here on The Stump.
You don't take on Wall Street and think it's an easy struggle. You don't take on corporate America and all of their greed and think you're going to do that overnight. But if we are going to create the nation that our people deserve, a nation that does not have the highest rate of child poverty of almost any major nation on earth, if you want to change that, you're going to have to fight. And that's what this campaign is about.
Bernie Sanders and his ascendancy here in the Democratic campaign. I mean, he started out as a largely marginalized candidate, not taken all that seriously. As I recall, he is in this race. What do you make of Bernie Sanders and that message there, Matt?
Well, you heard a message that was similar to the one Obama used against Clinton. I don't know that the messenger is quite as good for Sanders versus Obama, but we'll get to see how much that matters. He's sort of assembling a similar kind of coalition of young people and people who are estranged from Washington politics. And you can see, although he's pledged not to run a negative campaign, and he's running ads similar to what you just heard, where even though he doesn't mention Clinton, it's clear that he's implying that Clinton is less able to go up against Wall Street.
The biggest story in the U.S. economy in my lifetime, at least in my view, is the increase in income inequality. Big, big increase in the gap between those at the top and those at both in the middle and at the bottom. Middle class hasn't really had nearly as much progress. Neither have those at the bottom. If you're in the top 1%, top 0.1%, you've done fabulously well. And that is a fact that I think remarkably hasn't received nearly as much attention as I thought it would. But and Bernie Sanders is trying to tap into the discontent that the average citizen has about that.
Well, it is very interesting to contrast the Sanders message we just heard with what we're about to hear. Let's listen to a Hillary Clinton ad airing in Iowa responding to the very thing that we're talking about.
The American people can't afford to wait for ideas that sound good on paper, but will never make it in the real world. The grandmother who has to choose between paying for medicine and paying rent can't wait. The single mom who desperately needs a raise can't wait. The student with a mountain of debt can't wait. We can make real progress right now.
I'm caucusing.
I'm caucusing.
I'm caucusing for Hillary Clinton.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
Candidate Clinton, the pragmatist, the realist here, in response to the Sanders message, correct?
True, but unfortunately for Clinton, this same message is what she used at the very end in Iowa and New Hampshire last time against Obama, and it didn't work there. She shifted to saying he has pie-in-the-sky ideas and won't be able to get them done. I think what's different here, though, is that she's identifying specific constituencies that have particular concerns that need immediate action, and maybe that will work a little bit better.
Charlie?
The Clinton campaign 8 years ago suffered from some real organizational problems. I think they so were certain that they were going to win that they didn't understand the difficult ground game that they'd have to do. They're more organized this time. And regardless of the differences in the message, that organization might help to propel her to victory in ways that she couldn't do 8 years ago. We'll see.
And the Obama campaign was very well organized.
Extremely.
In contrast to that. I've got to ask your handicapping thoughts here on what happens in Iowa today. Who do you expect to prevail, Matt?
Well, if you had to bet, you'd say Clinton and Trump. I think it's possible, though, that the story coming out of Iowa will be more about what happens below that on the Republican side. If you see Marco Rubio rising, the press is sort of ready to tell that story, and it could be more influential in New Hampshire. So should Rubio show better than his poll numbers, that could be the story coming out of tonight, or should Cruz falter similarly?
Charlie Ballard?
Big question with Iowa is always who shows up. We have these polls with their margin of error of people's preferences, but tonight the voters will actually show up and they will reveal who took the trouble to go out to a caucus on a cold night, and they will show us that with no margin of error.
Of course, it's obvious to everyone, 1 week from today, it's the New Hampshire primary. New Hampshire's a very different place from Iowa. Bernie Sanders holding a healthy lead in the neighboring state to his own in Vermont. And South Carolina is an entirely different situation. We shall see. We want to thank both of our guests. Dr. Charlie Ballard directs the State of the State survey at Michigan State University's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research, and it was great to welcome Dr. Matt Grossman to our current state microphones. He is the new director of the Institute. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.